Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, Katie Weaver tells us about a few new films for the holiday season. And Steve Ember brings us part two of John Adams on the making of a nation. But first, Brian Lynn has a report on how Facebook can affect mental health.
Facebook has released new research suggesting social media can harm mental health when used in certain ways. The research is discussed in an online report titled, "Hard Questions: Is Spending Time on Social Media Bad for Us?" Facebook's director of research, David Ginsberg, wrote the report along with social psychologist Maura Burke. The two cooperated with psychology and sociology experts and mental health professionals. Several studies were used to support the findings. Facebook said research suggested that social media users who spent a lot of time only reading information but not interacting with others reported feeling worse afterward. Users who had interaction during the experience reported having better feelings. The company cited a study from the University of Michigan. It found that college students chosen to only read Facebook for 10 minutes were in a worse mood at the end of the day than those who read and posted messages or communicated with friends. Facebook also reported a survey by the University of California, San Diego, and Yale. It found that people who opened at least four times as many links as average users or who liked twice as many posts reported worse mental health than average. The report noted that some research makes a strong connection between technology use and teen depression. It said such problems may arise because mobile phones have redefined relationships, creating a state of people being alone together. The researchers said some people become depressed by looking at social media profiles and posts of others and then making negative comparisons to themselves. A study by Carnegie Mellon University suggested positive results for increased interaction. It found people who sent or received more messages and comments on their personal pages reported better improvements in social support, depression, and loneliness. Facebook said these improvements were even greater when the interactions took place with close friends and family. An additional study suggested that stressed students were twice as likely to choose Facebook to make themselves feel better than to watch online videos or play video games. Overall, Facebook said it is not just social media use that can affect a person's well-being. Rather, it believes both good and bad effects can result from how the service is used. The information on the new research came shortly after two former Facebook officials strongly criticized the social media service for its harmful effects on society. Facebook's founding president, Sean Parker, who no longer has ties to the company, accused the social media service of using methods that exploit human psychology. Parker said the goal in the early days of Facebook was to find ways to take up as much of a user's time and attention as possible. This development model, Parker claims, created an addictive system to keep people on Facebook for long periods to seek likes and comments from others to make them feel good. Former Facebook executive Chamath Palihapitiya recently told an audience that he feels guilty for helping develop Facebook when he knew deep down that something bad could happen. He said he now believes Facebook and other social media services provide tools that are ripping apart the way humans interact in society. He said the problems are being fueled by the basic need of people to seek ongoing feedback from others. Such feedback can actually lead to the pleasure chemical dopamine being released in the brain, he added. Palihapitiya says he has no easy solutions for how to solve these destroying influences of social media. In his own life, he rarely uses Facebook and said he does not allow his children to use it. In a television interview, he did say he believes Facebook is now doing more than other technology companies to address the negative effects of social media. Cal Newport is a professor of computer science at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. He has studied and written a lot about the harmful effects of social media. He told an online technology conference that most major social media companies now employ attention engineers to help design products that are as addictive as possible. Newport cited research suggesting social media use can break up a person's attention throughout the day. He says evidence shows that over time, this can permanently reduce an individual's ability to fully concentrate, possibly limiting education and job success. He also cited research confirming that social media use can lead to loneliness, depression, and anxiety. Newport urges everyone to consider quitting social media, like he has, and he provides steps for helping people do this. I'm Brian Lynn.
What makes a film right for the holidays? It has to appeal to the whole family and moviegoers of all ages. This year, three high-budget films meet the requirements. Star Wars: The Last Jedi was released widely last Friday. The political thriller, The Post, comes out this Friday. And the musical, The Greatest Showman, will be in theaters December 20th. Star Wars: The Last Jedi is the latest in the series about the fight of the Resistance against the First Order. And this installment is absorbing, even to those who do not follow Star Wars like a religion. The visually powerful science fiction film includes massive sets and complex characters. And the story is unpredictable, although it does, of course, center on the battle of good against evil.
The balance.
Actor Daisy Ridley again plays the part of Rey, a Resistance member, who finds Luke Skywalker and uncovers the powers of the Jedi. Actor Mark Hamill, who returns to the part of Luke Skywalker, praised the size and detail of the production.
I'd never been on a set that opulent in my life. Plus 150 extras in exotic makeups and alien prosthetics.
This is the first Star Wars movie directed by Rian Johnson.
I hope audiences come out of the theater wanting to run into their backyard, grab their Star Wars toys, and start flying spaceships around. I hope it just feels like a great Star Wars movie, a fun Star Wars movie that takes you back to being 10 years old again.
From sci-fi...
This is a devastating security breach that was leaked out of the Pentagon.
We turn to a real-life political story that shook America in the 1970s.
If the government wins, the Washington Post will cease to exist.
In The Post, director Steven Spielberg tells a story of bravery in journalism. In the 1970s, The Washington Post newspaper published parts of top-secret government documents. The documents described the war in Vietnam as a lost cause. They also showed that the U.S. government lied about the extent of its involvement in the war. Tom Hanks plays Ben Bradley, the famed Washington Post editor.
The way they lied, those days have to be over.
Meryl Streep plays Washington Post publisher Katherine Graham, one of very few women in leadership positions at the time.
If you publish, we'll be at the Supreme Court next week.
Meaning?
Well, we could all go to prison.
The Post is a highly entertaining, fast-moving political drama that will appeal to fans of political thrillers. But it should also interest people who see a link between the 1970s American political environment and the current one.
What will happen if we don't publish? We will lose. The country will lose.
If you consider movie musicals as the beating heart of the holidays, you are in for a treat. This year, actor Hugh Jackman takes center stage as The Greatest Showman.
Ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for.
The Michael Gracie film is based on the life of P.T. Barnum, founder of the Barnum and Bailey Circus, which he called the greatest show on earth. Hugh Jackman plays the celebrated character as he rises to fame. He gathers people with unusual skills who live on the edges of society. Together, they create an extraordinary variety show. Critics have not been able to review the film yet, but the Hollywood Foreign Press Association nominated it for 2 Golden Globes, Best Musical or Comedy and Best Actor. The music writers of last year's hit La La Land are also behind the songs in The Greatest Showman. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of America's second president, John Adams. He took office in 1797. He had served 8 years as vice president under President George Washington. Now state electors had chosen him to govern the new nation. Adams was an intelligent man. He was a patriot and an able diplomat. But he did not like party politics. This dislike caused trouble during his presidency
because two political parties struggled for power during his time in office. Adams was caught in the middle. John Adams was a member of the Federalist Party. As president, he should have been party leader. But this position belonged to a man who really knew how to get and use political power, Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton had served as Treasury Secretary under President Washington. Now, Hamilton was a private citizen, a lawyer in New York City. But he continued to have great influence over the national government. Federalists loyal to Hamilton controlled the Congress. Even President Adams' top cabinet secretaries were loyal to Hamilton. In fact, they worked together against the new president. This political situation made Adams' term in office very difficult. It also led to the end of Federalist Party power. John Furling is a professor emeritus of history at the University of West Georgia. He has written many books about early American history. He says every 50 years or so, the country experiences a period of extreme partisanship. He says the late 1700s were such a time. That partisanship helped split the Federalist Party.
It was a group under Hamilton who were called the Ultra-Federalist or the High Federalist at the time that were making war on the centrists. And in their case, it resulted really in the destruction of the Federalist Party. They never were a viable party again after the election of 1800.
Two major issues marked Adams' presidency. One concerned foreign policy. The other concerned the rights of citizens. The first involved America's relations with France. Americans were divided on whether to support the revolution in France. At first, many saw it as similar to the American Revolution against Britain. Vice President Thomas Jefferson especially supported the French. France helped America win its war for independence from Britain. The country's friendship continued when Thomas Jefferson served as minister to Paris. But many Federalists came to strongly oppose the revolution in France. They were horrified by the execution of the French king and queen. They did not like the idea of common people taking power. Federalists wanted an alliance with Britain. Over time, they demanded war with France. They used their power to prevent the American government from sending a pro-French representative to Paris. They also searched for any signs of insult, any excuse to declare war. John Furling says President Adams did not agree with the majority of Federalists.
Adams, from the very beginning, seeks and what he called an honorable peace. He tried to look for some sort of central position, centrist position, between the radical conservatives on the right and the radical liberals on the left.
Adams was afraid that the French Revolution would destroy America. He believed the American economy and government would collapse if the country became involved in Europe's struggle. So Adams tried to improve relations with France through negotiations. At the same time, Adams strengthened America's defenses. "We will be ready," he said, "if war comes." One incident especially brought France and America close to war. It is known in American history books as the X, Y, and Z affair. President Adams had appointed a committee of ministers to negotiate with the French government. French officials kept the ministers waiting for several weeks. While they waited, the ministers had a visit from three Frenchmen, later called X, Y, and Z. X, Y, and Z told the American ministers that France would sign an agreement if the United States did three things. It had to lend the French government $12 million. It had to apologize for anti-French statements in a recent message from President Adams to the American Congress. And it had to pay the French foreign minister $250,000. The American ministers were willing to pay, but they wanted to sign the agreement first. The French foreign minister refused. First the money, then the agreement. The Federalists finally had the excuse they were looking for. France had insulted the United States. The only answer was war, they said. Federalist newspapers added fuel to the fire by publishing anti-French propaganda. In a few places, pro-war groups became violent. The Republican Party could do little. Even Thomas Jefferson was helpless. He remained in Philadelphia, the capital of the United States at that time, but he had few friends there anymore. Congress quickly passed laws to create a permanent army and navy. It also approved new taxes to pay for them. And it passed two new laws by a narrow majority. These laws greatly increased the powers of the national government. They were known as the Alien and Sedition Acts. Federalists said the laws were necessary to protect national security. But in effect, the Federalists used them to weaken the power of the Republican Party. Under the Alien Act, the president could accuse any foreigner living in the United States of being a threat to national security. He could order that person out of the country. The act also increased the time a foreigner had to wait to become a citizen from 5 years to 14 years. Republicans were furious. Most foreigners, when they became naturalized citizens, joined the Republican Party. Republicans argued that the Alien Act violated the Constitution. They said it gave the government more powers than were stated in the Constitution. Federalists said the act was constitutional. They said the Constitution gave the government the right to defend the country against foreign aggression. The other law, the Sedition Act, barred the publication of anything that might incite public hostility against the government. Republicans argued that this act violated Americans' constitutional rights of free speech and a free press. Federalists once again defended it as necessary for national security. The Federalists tried to use the Sedition Act to quiet Republican critics of President Adams' administration. About 25 people were charged under the Sedition Act. These included several leading Republican newspapermen and a Republican member of Congress. Some of the men were tried, found guilty, and sent to prison. But other Republicans took their places in the fight against the act. The Federalist plan to stop criticism did not succeed. President Adams had signed the Alien and Sedition Acts into law. He believed they were necessary to protect the United States at a time when war with France was still possible. And his wife Abigail believed that passing the laws would stop newspapers from criticizing him.
The one piece of advice that she offers that is unfortunate and in fact catastrophic is that she really urges him to pass the Alien and Sedition Acts, which becomes the biggest blunder of his presidency.
Joseph Ellis is a history professor at Mount Holyoke College and the author of a book about John and Abigail Adams. He says Adams regretted passing the laws. In early 1799, Adams received several reports that France was ready to reopen negotiations on improving relations. He immediately nominated a new minister to France. Federalist senators threatened to reject the nomination. In the end, Adams agreed to nominate a committee of three ministers. The Senate approved them. It was many months before the three men went to France to negotiate the agreement, and it was many more months before they completed their work. But they did so on September 30th, 1800. After several years of bitter political struggle at home, President Adams finally prevented war with France. Later, he wrote that there was one thing he would like to be remembered for more than anything else. He gave himself the task of making peace with France, and he succeeded.
We can't say that about every American president, but we can say it about John Adams.
Historian John Ferling says he believes the United States would not have survived if the Americans had gone to war with France. Historian Joseph Ellis agrees.
I think that the long-term achievement of the Adams presidency is to preserve the coherence of a stable government and to see that the revolution survives and consolidates its energies and continues on into the 19th century.
1800 was another presidential election year in the United States. The Federalist Party appeared to be dying. It failed in its effort to force the nation into war with France, and it failed to silence its critics through the Alien and Sedition Acts. Party leaders knew the election would be their last chance to keep political power. The Republican Party had more popular support. It also had gained an increasing number of seats in state legislatures and in Congress. Party leader Thomas Jefferson was sure to be elected president unless the Federalists could find a way to change the electoral process.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.